Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those of you who know that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are rotten to the core, even counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, toll-free, 877-300-7645. We read in the news today that presidential candidate Jeb Bush... Good Lord, I hope we do not have, and the Lord's not good, by the way, he is Satan. But that's probably Jeb Bush's God. He said today that Vladimir Putin was a bully. Yeah, this guy is so astute in his grasp of international affairs and global politics that he begins his argument with ad hominem. Vladimir Putin is a bully. Hey, Scott, did you know that Vladimir Putin is a bully? So, Scott, did Vladimir Putin invade Afghanistan?
No, he did not.
Did Vladimir Putin invade Iraq and break it?
No, he did not.
Did Vladimir Putin invade Syria?
Nope. No, he did not.
Did Vladimir Putin lead a bombing coalition against Libya?
No, I don't think Vladimir Putin's done any of that. I don't think he's declared war on anybody other than Ukraine, who was trying to actually mess with him.
Has Vladimir Putin flown drones to kill people in Somalia and Yemen and Pakistan?
No.
So who's the bully?
Well, we are.
We are. You are so stupid, Jeb Bush. You're calling a guy who is not invading foreign countries. Maybe Ukraine has been part of Russia for the last 300 years. It happens to be his neighbor. And the government that the United States is funding and equipping with military hardware and intelligence is killing his people. And at the very most, he's defending them. And yet... you want us to believe that Vladimir Putin is the bully and that, oh, we in the United States, we're the peacemakers. We're the nice guys.
Poor little us. We're just here to help people.
Who has the bigger military by more than 10 times? The United States.
We do.
Who's spying on the world and their own citizens? The United States, who's created an internal military to control their people? The United States. We're the bully, Jeb. And there are few and far between, you'd find amongst presidents, that were more of a bully invading two countries during his term than your brother. Your father wasn't any better. He also invaded Iraq. We're the bully, Jeb. God, get a brain, pal. Despite several eyewitness reports and government statements suggesting that the policy was no longer implemented, witnesses who tried to cross the border, this is in Eureka, this year and in 2004, told the United Nations Commission on Human Rights that the soldiers of their very own country, who are supposed to be defending their country, turned their guns on them. This is a country now that is two-thirds Islamic. They're experiencing what America will soon experience. The military turning their sights on their own people. Even those who are trying to flee, saying, you know, I don't want to live in this hellish place. Even trying to escape hell, the military will turn their guns on the would-be freedom seekers. Don't think it won't happen in the United States. It's happening in Eritrea today. The year-old investigation of the United Nations Commission of Inquiry accuses Eritrea of operating a vast spine and detention network, holding people without trial for years, including children. Who does that sound like? Who has the most vast spy network in the world? Scott, I'll give you one guess.
It's us.
Oh, yes, it is. And didn't the Patriot Act enable America to incarcerate people without indicting them, without charges, for up to 2 years?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it did. Yeah.
Yeah. And which country has now publicly acknowledged that with authorization at the highest level, right from the President of the United States, that it engaged in outright torture of those detainees?
Once again,
it'd be the United States too, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to our world. Neighbors and family members are often drafted to inform on each other, according to the report. You know, I just left a place, California, where neighbors are given rewards for turning neighbors in. Now, this happened to be on water use. You know, one day it'll be on gas for your car. Another time it'll be running your air conditioning or your heater and your electric bill. You know, your internet use will be throttled. The government will control every aspect of your life. You're caught spending cash. There'll be an informant. But, you know, in the United States, we don't even need neighbors to spy on neighbors like they do in Urethra, because the FBI is flying an Air Force above Americans, spying on them. The NSA is spying on your every phone call and your every internet click. Who needs neighbors spying on neighbors when you're paying your country to spy on you and everyone else? When I am in Urethra, I feel that I cannot even think because I'm afraid that people can read my thoughts and I'm scared. Welcome to America, said one witness interviewed for the report, describing the fear and paranoia created by the state's mass surveillance program. What is by 100-fold, maybe 1,000-fold, could be 1,000,000-fold, the largest mass surveillance program in world history? Would that be the NSA? Oh, and combine it with the CIA. Combine it with the FBI's domestic air force. Combine it with the Department of Homeland Security. Yes, folks. This article is on Urethra because of the mass surveillance program, because the military is engaged inside of the country as opposed to defending the country. But is this not a depiction of America? The study said by the United Nations that systematic, widespread, and gross human rights violations have been and are being committed by the Eritrean government under the authority of that government. Didn't the United States, with the authority of the President, National Security Advisor, Vice President, the CIA, authorize torture? Hasn't this government, at the level of senator and congressman and president, even the Supreme Court, authorized the systematic and widespread, gross, constitutional violation of unreasonable search and seizure, striking the concept of due process? Isn't this now America? Welcome to our world. And yet, oh no, it's climate change and extremism that are topping the agenda at the G7 summit. Chancellor Angela Merkel wants the group to reach an agreement on limiting global temperature rises. Angela, temperatures aren't rising. They should be rising. We're in a warming period. The warming period began around 1850 to 1875, and yet we had a complete nullification of the warming period the last 17 years. You may want to get with the program, Angela. Maybe put a thermometer outside your office. But she revealed the purpose of her lie. That's wealth redistribution. She is also calling on the G7 members to contribute to a fund for poor countries suffering the worst consequence of climate change. Yeah, it's all wealth redistribution, with them skimming money off the top, with them controlling from whom the money is taken and to whom it is given, which empowers them. But beyond that, there were talks of the threat of radical extremism. Radical extremism, mind you. Not just extremism, but radical extremism. In Nigeria, Tunisia, and Iraq. Yeah, great. Wasn't Tunisia the first of the Arab Spring, the blossoming of democracy? Not so much, huh? No, it's a hotbed, according to the G7, of radical extremism. This was a moderate country. It was the single most moderate of all Islamic nations. It was a secular country in the world of Islam. Oh, but yes, the government was overthrown. The Ennahda party was empowered. They were the most fundamentalist Islamic party. And now it's a hotbed for Islamic terrorism. These leaders can't say Islam, but guess who is terrorizing the country of Nigeria? Who is kidnapping little girls and using them as sex slaves? Who is forcing little boys, some under the age of 10, to wield guns and knives to attack and kill their own family? Boko Haram, now a proud member of the Islamic State. And, of course, what's happening in Iraq? Fundamentalist Muslims are at war with fundamentalist Muslims. Sunni via Shia. But they can't speak of that. So they just talk about radical extremism as opposed to fundamentalist Islam. Well, there you have it, folks. The threats to the world are radical extremism and global warming. How do you like them apples? Barack Obamanator is preparing to deploy more U.S. troops to Iraq to combat the Islamic State. You know, when you began bombing, when you first declared war on the Islamic State, they were insignificant. And you've been bombing them nonstop. You claim to have killed 10,000 of them, and now they are the most significant military institution on planet Earth. And most significant because while the U.S. Army is bombing them, it's making no difference. The Islamic State is capturing more and more territory, more and more military bases, more and more cities, moving ever closer to Damascus, circling Damascus. And so you've made them significant by your focus upon them, by your troop deployments against them, by your bombing missions against them. And so now your answer to your own stupidity, to your counterproductive strategy, is more of the same. You're going to send 500 more troops to Iraq. And he's going to open a U.S. military base in Iraq. It's a new training base, and of all places, the Anbar province, which is now controlled by the Islamic State. And so in the midst of the territory controlled by the Islamic State, you, Mr. Abominator, are going to open a U.S. military base, boots on the ground. And then you've decided that, well, what we're going to do is we're going to train Sunnis in the Iraqi army. But Mr. Abominator, there are no Sunnis in the Iraqi army. The Sunnis are with the Islamic State. The Iraqi army is comprised of Shia. You can't be that stupid. Ah, but Dateline Washington and a major shift of focus in the battle against the Islamic State, the Obaminator, is planning to establish a new military base in the Anbar province and to send 500 more American military officers in hopes of retaking the city of Ramadi. The White House on Wednesday is expected to announce a plan that follows months of behind-the-scenes debate on how predominantly, on how to ultimately retake Mosul, another Iraqi city that fell to the Islamic State last year. Matter of fact, it's celebrating its year anniversary. The fall of Ramadi last month effectively settled the administration debate. Oh boy, they were talking. At least for the time being, American officials said Ramadi was now expected to become the focus of a lengthy campaign to take back Mosul. But not until 2016. You know, if your primary goal is to recapture the bank that was robbed, with all of the money in the bank now gone, maybe you ought to focus on keeping the bank from being robbed. What good is it to take back Ramadi? Huh? All of the military hardware is gone. It's in the enemy's hands. The people are Sunni, principally, in Ramadi. They don't want the U.S. military there. They don't want the Iraqi military there. They don't want Shias there. When Shias were there, they were tormented. There is no retaking this place. It's hostile to the Iraqi government. It's hostile to the Iraqi military. And there are no Sunnis to train in the Iraqi military. How can we continue to be this stupid? Just trying to get the right training to the right folks, a U.S. administration official said. Who are the right folks in Iraq? Who are the right folks in Iraq? The Christians have no power, and they've been essentially annihilated. The Zoroastrians have no power. They've been essentially annihilated. The Shias are working for and sworn allegiance to the Ayatollah in Iran. And when they are empowered, they torment, torture, bombard the Sunnis. And the Sunnis comprise the Islamic State. I would like you to tell me, please, who are the right people? Well, the fact is there are none. When we return to Shattering Mist, we will once again consider the acknowledgement of Rumsfeld regarding the ill-fated invasion of Iraq. What we learned and didn't learn. I shared this quote with you yesterday, but there's more meat on this bone. This is from the Secretary of War of the United States, Donald Rumsfeld. When we went into Iraq, my view, and I thought it was a broadly held view, was that the goal was to have Saddam Hussein not be there. Yeah, that was their goal. And everybody was just in the media in America, universally, yeah, he's a bad guy, let's get rid of him. And, you know, just, oh boy, he gassed his own people. There wasn't one person in the media that explained the context of him gassing the Kurds. Not one. Not one. There's not one person in the media that says, okay, if we get rid of him, what then? What's the consequence of getting rid of him? What's going to happen in Iraq? How is Iraq composed religiously, politically? What are the prospects that somebody will emerge in Iraq that will be better than he is? How does Saddam Hussein compare to other Islamic despots? Did not a single person, not one in the media, discuss any of those things? And here, the administration, no one brought it up. It wasn't that we had an idea as to what we would replace Saddam Hussein with. And wait, you hear what they were thinking was going to be the consequence of having him gone. We wanted to replace him with a government that would not have weapons of mass destruction. Think about how stupid that statement is. He didn't have weapons of mass destruction. Didn't have them. But guess who has them now? The Iraqi government. Why? Because we gave them to them. Guess who has them now? The Islamic State. Why? Because they took them from the Iraqi government. Oh boy, that worked out great. We went from no weapons of mass destruction to weapons of mass destruction that would not invade its neighbors. Yeah, Saddam Hussein invaded one neighbor, Kuwait. And you tell me why that was bad. Why don't you come up with a way of explaining why that was bad? Because I don't know it, folks. Think about it. Kuwait and Saudi Arabia are the most prone to fund and establish Islamic mosques around the world. They are the most aggressive supporters financially of fundamentalist Islamic terrorist organizations. It's not a coincidence that 80% of the 9/11 suicide bombers were Saudi Arabians. It is the single most fundamentalist Islamic government in the world in Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait is just a shadow of Saudi Arabia. Without the wealth of Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, there would be no Islamic terrorism on the planet today. It would have no source of funding. That's how bad it is. The world was better off with Saddam Hussein controlling Kuwait and then controlling Saudi Arabia, because he was the most opposed to indoctrinating young men in fundamentalist Islam. He was the most opposed to empowering Islamic clerics. He was the most opposed to jihad and to Islamic terrorism of any dictator anywhere in the Middle East. That would be reasonably respectful of the diverse ethnic groups. You know, there was no one in the entire Islamic world prior and since that was more respectful of the diverse religious groups and racial groups in Iraq than Saddam Hussein. Under Saddam Hussein, there were nearly 2 million Christians. There are essentially none today. Under Saddam Hussein, there were hundreds of thousands of Zoroastrians. There are none today. Under Saddam Hussein, there was no civil war between Sunni and Shia. Under Saddam Hussein, there was no Islamic terrorism in Iraq. You could not have found an Islamic dictator that was more protective of minorities than was Saddam Hussein. And what do we have now? What was the consequence of Rumsfeld's and Bush's stupidity? Annihilation of Christians, annihilation of Zoroastrians, and a civil war between Sunnis and Shias. That's what you got. And the Kurds having declared their own country and being armed to the teeth, having no affinity for the rest of the country. He says, meaning the Sunni, the Shia, and the Kurds. And so what we did is we created a war between them when they had not been at war. You got the opposite of what you intended because you couldn't think, because you wouldn't think. That's not only true of Rumsfeld, but that entire Bush administration. This is what Rumsfeld told CNN in a phone interview Tuesday afternoon. And that was kind of the understanding that I thought everyone else had. Stupid. You didn't understand. You didn't even know. much less understand. You still don't understand. In a story titled Bush Was Wrong on Iraq, Rumsfeld said that he told the Times that the idea that we could fashion a democracy in Iraq seemed to me to be unrealistic. I was concerned about it when I first heard those words. I'm not one of those that thinks that our particular template of democracy is appropriate for other countries at every moment in their histories. There is no democracy in the Islamic world. The democracy doesn't even exist in America. It's a representative government. Democracies always fail. There was only two democracies in the history of the world, and they were oligarchs. And the two oligarchies were the Delian League for a brief period under Greece and Sparta. One was for military defense purposes and failed because you cannot impose choice. And the other failed because it was just too harsh, too enslaving of its neighbors, too cruel. He says that in other, as it, he says, as he look at Rumsfeld's statements, this is from the BBC, and his comments at previous times and to other places that he's made about democracy in Iraq, suggests that he has changed his tune. In May of 2003, in a speech to the Council on Foreign Relations, for example, Rumsfeld said, "This much is clear. We have a stake in their success, for if Iraq, with its size, capability, resources, and history, is able to move to the path of a representative democracy, however bumpy the road, then the impact in the region and the world could be dramatic. Iraq could conceivably become a model, proof that a moderate Muslim state can succeed in the battle against extremism taking place in the Muslim world today." Ooh, that didn't work out, did it? Rummy. No, in the battle between extremism and moderate Islam, the myth of moderate Islam has been destroyed. According to the Quran, you cannot be a peaceful or moderate Muslim. The Quran's ninth surah makes that absolutely clear. You ought to have listened. Everyone should listen to the speech made by Ibrahim Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the head of the Islamic State, as he systematically quoted the Quran to prove, according to Allah, according to Muhammad, according to the Quran, all Muslims must be jihadists. All Muslims must fight to the death. That there can never be a peaceful, moderate Muslim. Not never. Not ever. And that if you aspire to moderate Islam, Allah hates you. And that good jihadist Muslims are ordered to kill you so that Allah can torture you forever in hell. That is the truth. There is no other possible interpretation of the Quran, and all Muslims know it. So there you go. You made it a referendum on a mythical notion of moderate Islam against jihadism. And the myth was destroyed. Why can't the rest of the world see that? Why now, in hindsight, that this was your goal and it blew up in your face and you got the antithesis of what you anticipated? Why now can't you admit that you made a mistake, that you were wrong, that there is no such thing as moderate Islam? There never has been, there never will be. Why don't you admit in the media, in politics, in the military, that this notion that Islam can be moderated and may be made peaceful is factually and completely untrue? Rumsfeld, who served as Bush's defense secretary from 2001 to 2006, also told the Times that removing Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi was a big mistake because it destabilized the region. Yet we don't see Senator John McClown admitting that he goofed. We don't hear the Obaminator saying we turned Libya into a killing field for fundamentalist Islam. That we established the Islamic State there. That our invasion of Iraq simply led to the Islamic State. That we have destroyed Syria because of what we did in Iraq. It's no matter where you turn, whether it's Nigeria or Tunisia whether it's Somalia or the Sudan. Doesn't matter if it's Libya or Egypt, Syria or Iraq, Iran or Saudi Arabia, the story is the same. According to the Quran, all Muslims must be jihadists. They must declare war and engage in war against all humankind. That's the truth. We were wrong. Old Rumi expressed concern that the international community did not possess the tools to deal with Islamic extremism, a problem that will become more acute as the nation-state system collapses. Oh, Rumi, so you like nation-states, but you don't like the Islamic State. The movement for a caliphate, the movement against nation-states is central and fundamental, he said, and no one is talking about it. Have you ever heard of anyone at the United Nations begin to think about that concept? Nah, they don't think there either, Rumi. You didn't think. Bush didn't think. And what we experience now in the world is a direct result. Rumsfeld said that it may take decades to combat Islamic fundamentalism. Did you hear that, folks? Rumsfeld said it may take decades to combat Islamic fundamentalism. He didn't say radical extremism. He said Islamic fundamentalism. Now, he's no longer in power. He's no longer part of any administration. He is no longer Secretary of Defense. But good God, somebody that was once in a position of power actually used the right terms. Islamic fundamentalism.
Let me ask
it's not
you,
extremism. It has nothing to do with radical anything. Yes, Scott?
Let me ask you, you like to do this to me all the time. Let me ask you some things. In sports, what are the first thing that you learn in sports?
The fundamentals.
Okay. And are the fundamentals, well, they're the basis for everything else you do, right?
Correct. Everything is based on the fundamentals.
So when you start
talking
about
the fundamentals of golf, you learn the grip, you learn the stance, you learn the swing, you learn the rules, you learn the fundamentals.
So are people trying to say that if fundamentals are what you build everything on in sports?
Correct.
Are they really
the essence of the sport?
Are they really trying to say that things change when you move into the realm of religion? Like the word fundamental now is no longer it's something different.
What book is the most fundamental to Islam?
The Quran.
What human being is most fundamental to Islam?
Muhammad.
Did Muhammad have a collection of his sayings and deeds? Is there a collection of his sayings and deeds that would convey the fundamentals of the religion?
Yeah. That's the hadith,
right?
Yeah, that's the hadith, yeah.
Yep. Is there a collection of hadith that is fundamental to Islamic jurisprudence, to Islamic law?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Called Sharia, isn't it?
Yep.
So, to be a fundamentalist, you're a good Muslim. And so, what he's saying is that we have to combat is good Muslims, the best Muslims. We have to combat Islamic fundamentals. That Allah is God, that the Quran is scripture, that the hadith is inspired, that Islam is good. He said that it is incumbent upon Western leaders to explicitly point out the nature of the threat. He just said that the threat is Islamic fundamentalism, and he said it's incumbent upon Western leaders to say that the problem is Islamic fundamentalism, which means every Western leader is lying. Everyone. They're saying exactly the opposite. They say the problem isn't with Islam, but extremism or radical Islam. If leaders aren't willing to do it, why the hell should a guy with a wife and kids in the community put himself at risk? Now you've just answered the question, Rumi. as to why nearly 400,000 returning vets from Afghanistan and Iraq have taken their lives. You've answered the question as to why 600,000 are being treated for post-traumatic stress syndrome. They're asking that same question. Rummy. You begin to look at this thing not like a war, but more like the Cold War. You're not going to win this with bullets. You're in a competition of ideas. Wow. What happened to Rummy? Did he read Prophet of Doom? Did he listen to this show? Did he actually find a conscience? You're not going to win the war against fundamentalist Islam with bullets, nor with bombs, but only with words. Simply with words. You have to be willing to tell the truth, to expose and condemn fundamentalist Islam, which is a criminal enterprise, a declaration of war, a terrorist manifesto, absurdly false, counterproductive in every possible way, sexist, demeaning, enslaving. Muslims are the victims of Islam. Free them from Islam by using words. Speak the truth. Expose and condemn that which is evil. You can't win the battle against Islamic fundamentalism with bullets, but only with words. Wow. Rumsfeld, you finally got it right.